Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
From NPR News.
Weekday afternoons from 1 until 3.
A 20% chance of showers today here in Nashville with cloudy skies and the high in the lower 50s. It's 48 degrees right now in Nashville at 9 o'clock.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You. Once again featuring Charlotte, North Carolina's own wordsmith, Mike Collins.
He did very well, Mike did, at the first game. Don't you think, everybody? Yeah. Very well. He felt even better after he threw up after the show.
We're that game that has all those strange words with all those strange definitions.
It's the horse-drawn, elegant carriage that took you to the insane asylum. It's the Surrey with the lunatic fringe on top.
So come join us in our revelry. Remember, the play's the thing. The score, not important. In a way, you're absolutely right. In a way,
can I have 10 points?
The best of Witten wordplay is yet to come today. 5 minutes hence we'll gather, and Says You will we play after this.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. The failure of the UN Security Council to take action aimed at stopping the violence in Syria is prompting protests. Hundreds marched through the Australian city of Sydney today after Russia and China blocked a resolution backing an Arab League plan that calls for Syrian President Bashar al-Assad to leave. Marchers also took to the streets of Melbourne, where protester Mohamed al-Masri said it's time for the violence to stop.
We want a peaceful resolution. We want the people of Syria to get the freedom that they so rightly deserve.
Also in Australia today, the Syrian embassy in Canberra was ransacked. The incident follows similar attacks against at least six other Syrian embassies in Europe and the Middle East, following reports that Syrian forces killed more than 200 people in the city of Homs this weekend. In Afghanistan today, a car bomb killed five policemen and two civilians in Kandahar. NPR's Quill Lawrence reports that 19 people were wounded in the blast near the city's police headquarters.
Afghan officials say a car full of explosives had been left in the parking lot near the Kandahar police headquarters. The bomb detonated around noon local time. More than a dozen of the wounded were civilians, including women and children. The force of the blast wrecked cars and shattered windows for blocks around. The attack comes on the heels of a United Nations report that found 2011 had the highest level of civilian casualties since the U.S.-led invasion more than 10 years ago. Insurgent bombs and landmines are blamed for the vast majority of the non-combatant deaths. Civilian casualties increased 8% from 2010 to 2011, despite a reduction in NATO and American troops killed in action. Quill Lawrence, NPR News, Kabul.
In Egypt today, a fourth day of clashes outside the Interior Ministry in Cairo. Protesters angry about last week's soccer match. It turned deadly. Also in Egypt, the cases against at least 40 people, including several Americans, have been referred to a criminal court. They involve a dispute over the activities of pro-democracy groups and other organizations. Bitterly cold weather keeping its grip on Eastern Europe, where icy temperatures are being blamed for killing more than 200 people. NPR's Corey Flintoff reports from Moscow that homeless people in Russia and Ukraine have been hit hard.
Russia's Minister for Emergencies is ordering additional shelters to be opened to get homeless people off the frozen streets. The Russian government hasn't reported casualty figures for the last week, but a health official said at least 64 people died from the cold in January. Officials in Ukraine are also promising to provide more shelter space. The death toll in Ukraine is now well over 100, mostly from frostbite and hypothermia. Both Russia and Ukraine are relatively well prepared to deal with cold weather, but the cold is causing havoc in places that aren't so used to it. Forecasters say the extreme cold is likely to stay around for at least another week. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Moscow.
And from Washington, this is NPR News. It's Super Bowl Sunday. The New York Giants and New England Patriots will take the field in Indianapolis later this evening. Patriots coach Bill Belichick says his team has a job to do.
We got to go out and play a good football game all the way around, all three phases of the game. The Giants are good on offense, defense, special teams. They're well coached. They're disciplined. They're tough. So we'll have to, match their effort and do a little bit more.
Belichick is trying to join Pittsburgh's Chuck Knoll as the only men who've coached four Super Bowl winners. Giants coach Tom Coughlin, who had 65, is trying to become the oldest coach to win a Super Bowl. The Pro Football Hall of Fame's class of 2012 includes three players eligible in their second year and one who's been out of the game for more than five decades. From member station WKSU, Kabir Bhatia reports.
Running back Curtis Martin, linebacker Chris Dolman, and tackle Willie Rofe played in a combined 24 Pro Bowls over their careers. Each one made their debuts on the ballot last year, but missed the cut until now. Two Pittsburgh Steelers, center Dermoni Dawson and cornerback Jack Butler, are also in this year's class. Dawson was on the NFL's All-Decade team for the 1990s, and Butler for the 1950s. Rounding out the enshrinees is Seattle Seahawks tackle Cortez Kennedy, who was the NFL's Defensive Player of the Year in 1992. The players will be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio this summer during an 11-day festival. For NPR News, I'm Kabir Bhatia in Canton, Ohio.
Queen Elizabeth set to mark a milestone tomorrow. It will be 60 years since she ascended to the throne. She's the longest-serving British monarch after Queen Victoria, who reigned for more than 63 years. I'm Giles Snyder, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Joyce Foundation, working to improve the quality of life in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in Charlotte, North Carolina comes from the good folks at WFAE-FM and the historic Dunhill Hotel on Charlotte's Museum Mile and on the web at dunhillhotel.com.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Schur.
Thank you. Thank you. From the stage of Pease Auditorium in Charlotte, North Carolina, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. Television host, the Prince of Pronouns, Mr. Barry Nolan. Philanthropic guru and adverb advocate, Francine Akbar. And Charlotte Grammarian, first time says user, trust me, the bravest guy in the room, Mr. Mike Collins. I don't know, Mike, you want to be captain this week?
When a 10-year-old comes up to you at the intermission and says, good luck. Sorry about the last game. You don't even want to go back out, much less be captain. So
I will.
Francine, our adverb advocate.
Francine will be the captain. To my left, team two, words to him are a plaything. Logic, that's something else. Murray Horowitz. Literature is her bailiwick, art and culture her forte, Lenore Shannon. And words and puns are her stock and trade, though we sometimes wish she'd barter, Miss Carolyn Fay Fox.
Richard, I believe it is correctly pronounced Fort. Sorry about that.
It's true.
Oh, okay.
Toy boat.
Unless you're arrogant and pretentious.
That's right. Who's going to be the captain this week?
Murray.
Yes, words are my plaything.
Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. Let's begin with a round of definitions and derivations. For 5 points...
The ever-popular.
For 5 points, define, and for an additional five, divine the origins of the following common words and phrases. Carolyn, security blanket.
Security blanket. It is anything that gives the user or the wearer a sense of security and warmth and well-being.
That's the first 5 points.
The origin, from Linus. Let go of my scarf, Lenore.
It's not from Linus. Most people think it is, but it goes back
to Security blanket, would it be from some psychologist?
No, it is.
I think it's financial. Is it not? Does it have a financial?
No, I think it's a military term.
It was in World War II.
Right.
Boy, we've run the gamut there.
All right.
No, this goes back away. This goes back a little further
than that. How far back does it go, Richard?
1920s.
1920s. Security blanket. Okay, would this have something to do with the stock market?
It does not.
The Prohibition? The Depression?
Nothing whatsoever. No, it's you've got 7 points so far because there is the World War II derivation, and it's getting there.
Wait. They used to catch people who jumped out of burning buildings in blankets.
What a marvelous guess. Give him an extra point. Eight points total.
But he's
for
wrong,
that.
Right?
That's not correct, of course. Well, we'll all learn a little something. Many assume it was Charles Schulz's prop for his character Linus. It was a product from the 1920s that was affixed to a crib to keep an infant from escaping. It was called the security blanket.
Now you tell me.
You know, I used barbed wire on my daughter's crib. You were tucked in.
Try this one, Mike. Definition and derivation of grotesque.
Grotesque is anything that is just abhorrent to look at, I would think, or abhorrent to contemplate.
It is. That's the first 5 points.
All right. The derivation of grotesque.
I would have you look at the word and see if anything occurs to you. That's where you're going to find the answer here.
Does it come from theatrical?
It does not, no.
It was before they got the knack of burlesque.
As hideous as this might sound, I'm giving him some points for that.
Gross. Yeah,
That's not it, actually. Look at the first four letters and see if that occurs to you.
Grotto?
Grotto is exactly right.
Oh,
can you expound upon that?
Grotto-esque.
Yeah, grotto-esque is exactly right. I'm going to give you 8 points for this. Anybody want to try to flesh this out?
It was the idea of creepy monsters that were in there?
In where?
In the catacombs.
In the catacombs down below the...
Churches.
Grand Central Station.
Yeah, Grand Central Station. No, actually, Rome is where you want to go for this. Yeah, it actually means grotto-like and refers not to picturesque grottos that are lovely and blue, but rather the funereal vaults under Rome where the walls were adorned with eerie, fantastic images of death. This evolved into the Italian for grotto-like paintings and into English as grotesque. So that's where it comes from, and we got our second ooh of the day. What do you know? All right, Murray, I love this one. Definition and derivation of lunatic fringe.
Well, the lunatic fringe is clearly the extreme, irrational part of any movement of partisans or people who adhere to one belief or view.
That's the first 5 points.
So the lunatic fringe.
How about a haircut?
Would it have
I'm
anything?
Sorry,
a haircut.
That's exactly right. He's exactly right. Though Teddy Roosevelt adapted this phrase to describe political opponents, of course, it originally was just the name for a hairstyle in the 19th century. Fringes are bangs in England, and styles with cropped hair and curved or wavy bangs hanging down were called lunatic fringe.
And Peter Nunes was right among them.
And there you go. 10 points. Very good. Nice job.
All right.
Try this one, Francine. And don't be fooled by this. Definition and derivation of chaise lounge.
Well, a chaise lounge is a reclining couch.
It is.
And don't be fooled. A chaise in French is a chair.
That's correct.
A lounge, we're guessing it's a chair upon which you recline.
That's where you got fooled.
Yes, I guess
it's
that
the
might
word,
be the
it's
point.
It's the usage lounge. Of the word lounge and where that comes from. Can you want to?
Is it more like Lulger for long? Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
Thank
yes,
you.
Very good. It is exactly that. It's not that you're lounging, it's that it's long, so you can stretch your legs out. It's the type of chair where you can do just that, and it was called long chair. This is one of my favorites of the day, Lenore. Definition and derivation of steeplechase.
Wow.
Well, a steeplechase is a type of horse race. I'm trying to think of it.
It has to do
my
with jumping. It's also a human race.
It's also a human race, yes.
And it means
okay.
It has to do with leaping over obstacles and water and stuff like
right.
that.
That's exactly right.
It's
that's
a
five
terrific
points.
Party. It's a great event with lots of picnic baskets and everyone looking so grand and champagne and everything like that. So steeplechase, where did it come from? I'm amazed.
Well, if you're jumping high, you're chasing steeples, I would, but maybe that's too literal.
Well, this has to do with chasing steeples, all right, but not in that sense. This is pretty literal.
Why would you chase a steeple? Steeple's there, you know,
it's not going anywhere. Exactly.
That's right.
So
chasing is, it's just refers to any kind of exercise in futility.
In a way, you're absolutely right.
Can I have 10 points?
So was there a competition to build the biggest steeple that no one could, that kind of became an impossible task after
not
a while?
Not to build the biggest steeple.
Was it architecturally?
No.
Is it sort of like tilting at windmills that if you're chasing steeples, you're, you know, just jumping over hurdles for no.
Well, in a way, but I'm going to give you 8 points because you got a long way there. But I'm going to go to the other side. Do you have any thoughts?
Now it's done in an arena. Once upon a time, was it set up so that you go most of the way out of town and you're going to just race across country and you can see the church steeple off there, and when they say go, the first one to get to the steeple wins.
You know something? You would have gotten 9 points for that. That's very, very close. Listen to this. It's, of course, the race over obstacles, jumps, water, that kind of thing. Unsuccessful fox hunters returning from a fruitless chase would spy a church steeple in the distance. In the late 18th century version of Last One There is a Rotten Egg, they would dash over hill and dale to be first, thus alleviating the stigma of foxless fortune.
Very good.
So that's where it comes
love
from.
Love that answer. That's
I
that.
Enjoyed finding out about that one. And finally, Barry, you get a total of 8 points for that. And finally, Barry, definition and derivation of tycoon.
Tycoon.
Yes, T-Y-C-O-O-N.
Tycoon is someone who has been fabulously successful and has accrued a great deal of wealth.
That's correct. That's the first 5 points.
And the word may come from the feeling that some of these people were bandits.
Why would the word...
Because they would have raccoon-like, you know, the little bandity.
Well, I walked right into that one, didn't I? No, that's not... What
is this
language would you think it comes from?
In India?
Oh, what a great guess. No, that's not correct, I'm sorry to say.
So this was Chinese?
Not quite.
No.
Asian?
Yes.
This was Thailand?
No.
Audience? Japanese.
Japanese. Japanese is exactly right. I'm going to give you, 7 points, you figure? 7 points for that, because you did get the definition. It is from the Japanese tycoon, T-A-I-K-U-N, I hope I pronounced that correctly, meaning great prince. He was the hereditary commander-in-chief of the Japanese army and held power and sway that we now attribute to tycoons. So it comes from Japanese, and that's where definition. Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from our friends, the Farewell Drifters. It's the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Murray, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The others have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Francine's team. 10 points are up for grabs to Francine if she can find the bluffer, or to you, Murray, if she can't. A few seconds to come up with a definition for the word that is the contribution of Bill Tonra of Everett, Massachusetts. Thank you, Bill. That word is strickle. S-T-R-I-C-K-L-E, Strickle. Gentlemen?
Say it once and shout it out loud. He's a man with his head in a cloud. You can't see if it's up or it's down. He don't know what's coming around. Change the tone, but the voice is the same. Always screaming out the same old refrain. They don't know if he's right or insane. No one listens, but he don't complain. Everyone is talking, everyone is singing the blues. Everyone is talking, everyone is saying it's true. Everyone is talking, everyone is talking for two.
Here's a quick update. Says You travels to Thousand Oaks, California, Saturday, February 18th, for a live performance of the show. Tickets, information, and details are available by following the Join the Fun link on our website at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou. And for the folks in San Francisco, KQED is adding a new performance on Friday, April 20th. Check the site out for details and come join the fun. That's Thousand Oaks in San Francisco. Live performances. Says You. Says You returns after this from home.
In her recent films, Meryl Streep has transformed herself into Julia Child and now Margaret Thatcher.
It's not about the audience. It's all about fooling the other actors into believing that you are who you say you are, because I can read that immediately in their eyes, you know?
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Meryl Streep. Her new film is The Iron Lady. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m.
Next time on The World, Girl Power comes to Burma.
Give a girl time, give time for the girl, give a girl.
Censorship has loosened up as Myanmar tries democracy. That means opportunity for the nation's artists.
And suddenly now, the interesting question of, so you've got freedom of speech. What do you want to say?
Burma's first girl band pushes the limits. Next time on The World.
Weeknights at 9 o'clock.
You're listening to Says You here on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. The time is 9:22. It's 50 degrees in Nashville.
Support for Says You in Charlotte, North Carolina comes from the good folks at WFAE-FM and the historic Dunhill Hotel on Charlotte's Museum Mile and on the web at dunhillhotel.com. That's D-U-N-H-I-L-L.
Everyone is talking for two. Everyone
is talking for two. That was the Farewell Drifters. That's Zach Bevel, Joshua Britt, Clayton Britt, and Dean Merrill. Thank you very much, you guys, for giving us a little time with the word strickle. We will go first to Carolyn Faye Fox.
Strickle. Okay, if you've ever done any baking, you know that precise measurements are very important. And you've probably used a strickle, because a strickle is any kind of straight edge that's used for leveling flour in a cup or grain in a container so that you don't have a heaping cup of something. You use a strickle. Level it off.
Straight edge.
So like my finger.
Yes. Well, you're not really a straight edge.
Oh.
It's a straight edge. You level off the top of a cup or something like that, and that's a straight edge.
And I gladly pay a nickel for a totally accurate strickle.
Okay.
Otherwise, in an hour with all my flour, I'll be in a terrible pickle.
Or, if you turned it sideways, you could use a sickle for a strickle.
You could.
You could.
Okay, if that's what you're willing to accept, fine. Oh, yeah, so. It could be that. It could be a straight edge used in baking, leveling things off. That could be it. Or it could be something else. What say you, Murray?
Well, it does have to do with straightness. Real delicatessen aficionados know that they need to ask for the half-sour dills that are not curved, but that are perfectly straight. And the straight pickle is known as the strickle. No, that's not. This is a quick crowd. It only took them about 15 minutes to take on that one.
They followed. They hung on every word, though.
They did.
That was
really
good.
Did.
Yeah.
No. It's a kind of a harness that links together two or more pairs of horses. So big teams of horses had a connected kind of harness called a strickle.
A connected harness. Got a couple of teams of horses. Want to get them together? Ben-Hur would have used a strickle.
Yeah.
Or it could be something else. Lenore, what say you?
Well, Carolyn was correct in heading down into the culinary world. Strickle is actually an illness that you get from eating soured milk products, most particularly cheese, like bad cheese that's gone past its, even if it's, kind of disgusting to begin with. It's really bad, and you eat it, and you get very sick. Like, oh my, oh me, please throw away that stinky brie. So it's specific to an illness from a sour milk product.
So you get a hold of some bad brie, you could come down with strickle. Is that right? It could be that. It could be the harness. Someone like Ben-Hur would have used to connect teams of horses, or it could be that straight edge that you use to level off the top of things. It's one of those three, and the choice, Francine, is yours.
I seek your input. I will tell you, I've spent a fair amount of time in the kitchen, and I've never encountered a strickle, I don't think.
Well, in my time from chariot racing, I'd go...
Yeah?
Yeah. Man, I knew you were old.
Movies.
I didn't know you were that old.
Yeah?
I'd go with the harness linking two teams of horses.
You would?
I would have gone with the pickle, but he changed his answer.
Yeah. Well, he likes to do that. Yeah.
So, he had me at pickle.
Yes. Yeah,
I think it has to be the horses.
You think it has to be the horses?
Yeah.
Well, I don't see anything compelling about the others.
Right.
So we'll go with the horses.
They're going to go with the horses. Murray, that was your definition. A harness that links together teams of horses. Is that, in fact, what a strickle is?
Strickle, please make something
up. It is not, which means it's something else. Audience, your turn. What do you think? How many say the straight edge? How many say the illness you get from bad brie? Oh, I would say, Carolyn, that this audience thinks that a strickle is the straight edge that you use for leveling things. Is that, in fact, what it is?
Strickle, a straight edge used for leveling grain in a
container. That's exactly what it is.
Good job.
10 points for your team. Let's go on to round three. A round of says who. Using the clues provided, please tell me who uttered the following quotable quotes. Carolyn, this quintessential Southern belle famously said, I'm as pure as the driven slush.
It was Tallulah Bankhead?
It was exactly Tallulah Bankhead. Very good.
There, Tallulah Bankhead, when we played in Camden, she had played the Camden Opera House, and I remember when I was reading up about her, one of her greatest lines
Can you say
was
this?
That when she ran into her husband, an ex-husband whom she hadn't seen in years, she turned to him and said, "I thought I told you to wait outside." Isn't that great?
Yeah. I remember that. All right. Try this one, Mike. Attributed to many, it was this solitary soul who offered, "Beware of all enterprises that require new clothes."
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Solitary soul. That's obviously a clue. Huh?
This is the guy at Walden Pond.
Henry David Thoreau.
Henry David Thoreau is exactly right. Amazing. 10 points. That's exactly who that was. Try this one, Murray. When asked by a reporter what he thought of Western civilization, he replied, "I think it would be a good idea."
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I know that one. I think it was my dad.
Probably.
Something tells me Bertrand Russell, but it's wrong.
When asked by a reporter what he thought of Western civilization, he replied, "I think it would be a good idea."
You sure you think it's England?
Well,
I don't know. Bertrand Russell's pretty obscure.
How about a clue?
Yeah. Well, that'll cost you some points.
Listen, at this point, that's a fair exchange.
Well, how about this for a clue? When asked by a reporter what he thought of Western civilization, this great soul replied...
Oh, Mahatma Gandhi.
Mahatma Gandhi is exactly right. That's a pretty big clue. We'll give him 6 points for that. I think that's fair. That's a pretty good clue. Try this one, Francine. This acerbic Algonquin is known for saying, "If you want to know what God thinks of money, just look at the people he gave it to."
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll guess Dorothy Parker.
And you'll guess correctly. 10 points. Very good.
She was an Algonquin. I thought she was a Sioux.
Try this one, Lenore. This perpetually perplexed pianist gave this self-assessment: underneath this flabby exterior lies an enormous lack of character.
Could you read the question again? Underneath this flabby exterior?
Yes. This perpetually perplexed pianist gave this self-assessment: underneath this flabby exterior lies an enormous lack of character.
Was it Victor Borgia?
It
was Liberace.
It was not Liberace either.
No, it wasn't
Flabby
Fats Waller. Flabby exterior.
It's an enormous lack of character. You know,
Oscar Levant.
Oscar Levant is exactly
there.
It when he says it. Yeah.
Thank you, Murray.
Give him 6 points for that one too. Good. That was a good job, Murray. That was a really tough one. And finally, try this one, Barry. I learned in school that money isn't everything, that it's happiness that counts. So my mother sent me to a different school. Oh, boy.
This is an American?
Not really, no.
Not really.
That's a clue.
It's
somebody who came to America.
Oh, sure did.
Comedian.
It's somebody that is relatively modern?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jump in.
Bob Hope.
No, not Bob Hope. It's a good guess. I learned, and I can actually give you the...
Jack Benny?
No. I learned in school that money isn't everything, that it's happiness that counts. So Mama sent me to a different school.
Mama.
Yeah. Mama.
I don't think they're going to get this one.
This is painful.
Is this a George line Burns. Out of Gypsy?
No, it's not out of Gypsy, but...
No, it's not out of Gypsy.
Is it a line out of a musical?
It's funny that you would have mentioned so many male characters.
Because it's a female character.
Yeah.
And this is Mae West.
It sounds like Mae West, not quite.
We give up.
They give up. I'm going to go to the other side.
Was it Zsa Zsa?
Yeah, of course it was Zsa Zsa.
Oh,
of course it was Zsa Zsa. Zsa Zsa Gabor is the correct answer to that. Good job, Lenore. This week's Spotlight Round comes at the request of Barkey Thompson of Baltimore. Barkey writes, I love catching you folks in errors, and I often get the chance. Like the time you mistitled Darwin's opus, or when you called George VI, George V. Do you have any of those around for spotlighting? Well, Barkey, we found the first one you mentioned. So see if you can find the gaffe Barkey found in the round we called Op-Sit.
I'll read a sentence from a famous book, document, or treatise. Please tell me the opus cited. Carolyn, mm-hmm. To no one will we sell, to no one will we refuse or delay right or justice.
It's a famous book.
Famous book or treatise.
Thomas Paine.
No, I will give you one clue here. The
good.
We is the royal we.
The royal we.
Oh, the Magna Carta.
No one will we sell, to no one will we refuse or delay.
Oh, the Magna Carta.
The Magna Carta.
The Magna Carta?
Magna Carta is correct. Good. Give them.
So either that or the Sears catalog.
Yeah.
It's one of those. Mixed
give
up.
Them 7 points for that. Seven points for that effort. Tony?
Yes.
It has pitilessly torn asunder the motley feudal ties that bound man to his natural superiors and has left remaining no other nexus between man and man than naked self-interest, than callous cash payment.
Oh, except for the cash payment. I thought that was a Declaration of Independence.
It is not.
No.
Say it again now. Because it rolls so nicely.
Yes, it's only fair, I guess. It has pitilessly torn asunder the motley feudal ties that bound man to his natural superiors, in quotes, and has left remaining no other nexus between man and man than naked self-interest, than callous cash.
It's the Neanderthal Bill of Rights, I think.
The Neanderthal Bill of Rights, yes.
The breakup of the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know,
there's really only four guys that get that joke. Yeah. Right? You know, they're killing themselves.
Pitiless sounds.
The Communist Manifesto?
The Communist Manifesto.
Oh.
Very good. You know, we feudal ties, naked self-interest, you know. Arnie, before completion - success, before the little fox has quite completed his crossing of the ice, its tail gets wet. No goal or destination is favorable now.
Oh, I know.
Is that Thoreau?
I know.
Any thoughts from that sign?
Thoreau?
Joel Chandler Harris.
Yeah, neither one. No. No?
Shall we try Thoreau?
I think we have to go to the other side.
For those who vaguely have memories of this period of life, it's the I Ching.
It is the I Ching, hexagram 64. That's exactly right.
Wow.
Very good.
The actual translation from the Chinese is, go figure.
Yeah.
I never was able to make any sense of those hexagrams.
Francine, in looking at nature, it is most necessary to keep the foregoing conclusions always in mind, never to forget that every single organic being around us may be said to be striving to the utmost to increase in numbers.
Very Darwinian.
It's very Darwinian.
Yeah. Origin of the species.
Origin of the species. Very good. 10 points. This is your day. Paula, conspicuous consumption of valuable goods is a means of respectability to the gentleman of leisure.
Yeah, Veblen's theory of the leisure class.
Veblen's theory of the leisure class. Very good. 10 points. Very good. And finally, Barry. The flood of novelty about to crash down upon us will spread from universities and research centers to factories and offices, from the marketplace and mass media into our social relationships, from the community into the home.
It sounds like McLuhan to me.
Is that the medium is the message? Cool fire?
It is not.
Is that what's the one about change is changed, the rate of change has changed, future...
Shock.
Future Shock. Alvin Toffler.
Alvin Toffler, Future Shock. A second guess, 8 points. 7 points. That's our Spotlight Round for this week. If there's a memorable moment you haven't heard in years, let us know. We'll send our crack staff into the archives and do our best to find your favorite. You can register your choice at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou. That's our look back. Now, back to the present. Let's go on to round 4, which is
Francine's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word, two will bluff. 10 points, Murray, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word midden. M-I-D-D-E-N, midden. Gentlemen?
In the month of January, we can live in the modern age. Wake up and hear our conscience, leave it all on New Year's Day. Can you feel that the world is turning, moving out from beneath our feet? This year we're gonna turn with it, modern age to an all new beat. Our life is more than photos and boxes. I don't want to be your lonely companion.
Says you coming to our town. Where can I find old shows? Who played that music I heard last week? So many questions, all answered on our website at saysyou.net. There you can find tickets to tapings, Dally on the Daily Dispatch, or access our complete archive. You can contribute a question to the show and absorb ridicule on a national scale. This and more at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU. Briefly, Says You pauses. We'll be right back.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. We'll hear about abuse and neglect in one of the best-funded care systems in the world, the New York State Group Homes for the Developmentally Disabled. Also, Margot Livesey mines Jane Eyre as well as her own Scottish roots for her new novel. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Weekdays at noon.
Hi, I'm Colm Feore, sitting in for Gian Gomeshi. Elizabeth Kay joins me to talk about her memoir, Sleeping with Famous Men. It's a frank recollection of her affairs with some of the people she profiled as a journalist. That's coming up on Q from PRI, Public Radio International.
Weeknights at 10 o'clock.
You're listening to Says You here on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. Coming up in about 17 minutes at 10 o'clock is Studio 360. And at 11 o'clock, it's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Right now the time is 9:42. It's 50 degrees in Nashville.
Drifters. Would you help me thank Miss Mary Kate Thompson and Miss Ailsa Carlson for keeping the score? Thanks, you guys. We appreciate it. Thanks very much for giving us a little time with the word midden. We will go first to Mike Collins.
Midden is the kind of fish that is found normally in cold water lakes, usually in northern European areas.
A northern European cold water fish. That's a midden. Mm-hmm. Could very well be.
I dated her once.
Hit him, will you? Just hit him. Or it could be something else. Francine, what's your take?
Well, Murray, you could have dated her once. Because Midden is the middle sister of three, as in Mr. Take My Midden Maiden. She would be the middle of three sisters who needed to be married off.
The middle of three sisters is the Midden. Got to be married off before you can marry off the youngest, I suppose. It could be that. Or it could be something else. Barry, what say you?
Midden, the pile of nuts collected by a squirrel. To use it correctly in a sentence, Donald Trump has the midden touch. He's rich, but he's really nuts.
You're just determined to drive this show up the air, aren't you? I just can't. A pile of nuts collected by a squirrel is a midden. It could be that. It could be the middle sister of three, one that needs to get married, or it could be that northern fish is starting to sound a lot better, isn't it? It is one of those three, and the choice, Murray, is yours.
You know, I was really flustered and until Barry made that last little intervention, because he went on such a tortuous route to get to that Donald Trump joke that I think he might have been trying to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, that he has the real definition, that midden might be it. I don't know.
Do squirrels collect nuts in piles?
No, they put them here and there. They hide them all over the place, because if they put it in a pile, then they would be in danger of losing them all if someone came.
Not obsessive squirrels.
Then I'd go for the squirrels.
Yeah.
I'd go for the squirrels over the fish.
It's too bad. I was just in Brevard, North Carolina this morning, and I could have asked one of the white squirrels that famously populate Brevard.
White squirrels, really?
Yeah. Oh, they're
so unusual.
They're really, it's
we have black squirrels in Cambridge that I've never had seen.
No,
ever seen a black
squirrel? Snow white squirrels.
Beautiful.
You know, it's true.
Well, nobody likes the middle sister of three.
No, it sounds too logical.
Maiden-ish.
I could be overreaching here, but I don't know. What do you think?
Well, why don't you
I like the idea that it's a pile.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does the cold fish leaves me cold. I don't know. We'll go with the squirrel, the nut pile.
Barry, they think that a midden is the pile of nuts collected by a squirrel. Is that in fact what it is?
We don't think that, but we're just guessing.
Is that in fact what it is?
A midden is the pile of nuts collected by a squirrel.
That's what it is. They've been killing you on the bluffing.
There is a word midden that means like the trash pile that's found in archaeology.
This is what I'm going to hear from all across the country, and I'm glad you brought this up. There is the first three definitions for this word, that it's an archaeological pile of waste that human beings leave behind through which scientists sift. And that is one of the definitions. But as I always say, we reserve the right to choose any of the 17 definitions we can find. And that's the one we chose.
Yes, sir.
But thank you for embarrassing me in front of the nation.
Oh, sorry.
My pleasure.
Let's go on to round five. Let's close tonight with a round of What's the Difference?
Ooh.
Help comes from Linus Rorick Patrick of Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and Meg Blau of Seattle. Carolyn, what's the difference between a sprain and a strain?
A sprain and a strain?
Yep.
Advil?
Almost.
All right. Let's see. A sprain and a strain. Well, a strain is not as bad as a sprain. A strain can just be, you know, something quite minor, whereas a sprain is...
More serious, right?
Take it, Murray.
A strain is muscular. You strain a muscle. But a sprain is a disease of the joint, usually caused by an injury.
It's not the joint.
The tendon. The tendon.
No, the ligament.
Sinews.
Give them 8 points. Eight points for that.
Sure.
What's the word they're missing, of course?
My dad was a doctor. The shame of it.
Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute.
Torn.
No, well...
Tissue.
What's the word they're missing, audience? Ligaments.
We said ligaments.
Oh, you said ligaments?
Yes.
I'm terribly sorry. 10 points.
Among the 55 wild stabs I took, ligament was one.
Wait a minute. Okay. I'm tired of waiting for that dumb bell.
There you go. There you go. She's taking matters into her own hands.
You bet.
She brought her own bell.
It's a joke
which didn't work particularly well on radio, but you never can tell.
I tried. Richard, what part of didn't you understand?
I get it. All right. Try this one, Mike. What's the difference between, and we're speaking in material science terms, what's the difference between toughness and hardness?
Well, hardness would be something that would be very difficult to break. It would be solid.
Hardness is tested on the sort of diamond scratch test.
Okay.
So
yes,
things that can be scratched by other things.
And toughness is something that would be difficult to pull apart or
break.
Boy,
is that close? That's about 8 points there. Not quite. Any help from this side?
Toughness, does that have... Hardness has to do with being scratched. Toughness has to do with being dented.
Oh, boy, that's... You know what? I'm going to give you the 10 points because you went a long way there. In material science, toughness is the ability of the material to absorb energy without breaking. That's the denting aspect of it. While hardness is the measure of a surface's ability to resist penetration at all. And that's the difference. One can take the dent, the other can't. So you were close enough to it, 10 points. Very good.
So that's what material science is.
In case you were wondering, it's, you know, cleared up now. Try this one, Murray. What's the difference between a cartel and a syndicate?
I have so much, it's such a wealth of experience with these things.
Yep.
A cartel is something very specific. It's like
they're selling something.
No, I think a cartel is a group of, like an interlocking directorate is a cartel. It's a group of people, an identifiable group of people who conspire or collude or collaborate.
Illegally?
No, not necessarily. It's
really?
An oil cartel. It's perfectly legal, but they do collaborate and collude. They can not necessarily against the law to fix prices or to
monopolize.
Regulate trade or monopolize in some way.
Yep.
A syndicate is a kind of a more federal system with individual operations that cooperate but they're not an identifiable.
Oh,
what?
Is it to do with what they're cartelling or syndicating?
Oh,
so
it does.
Syndicate is cartel is goods and syndicate is news not news but
services.
Something it depends on what it is. One is cartel has got something to do with physical goods like pork bellies.
When you first produce a sitcom, it's a cartel that produces it, but later it's a syndicate that reruns it afterwards.
That's good enough for me. I'm done with that. Here's what the dictionary says. A cartel is specific in that it is a group formed to regulate price and output, just as you said, Murray, while a syndicate is a more versatile term that covers a group joining for a variety of purposes, as in purchasing or investing capital, sharing risk, a lot of different things. So that's the difference. Try this one, Francine. What's the difference between a plutocracy and an oligarchy? And I bring this up because there was a big article on this in the New York Times last week, and it just killed me to read it. But what's the difference between a plutocracy and an oligarchy?
An oligarchy is to do with controlling industries.
I think it's more the control of the governmental control by a small number of favored people.
Rule by an elite, yes.
A plutocracy
is a nation that's ruled by a cartoon dog.
Let me tell you where I am in this process. 10 points, yes. That's where I am in this process. Now, would you tell me what a plutocracy is so we can move along here?
The wealthy?
Yes, that's exactly right.
The wealthy,
right.
That's right.
It's ruled by the wealthy. So I'm glad I gave you the 10 points. Mm. Plutocracy is ruled by the wealthy, while oligarchy is ruled by an elite.
Right.
Not necessarily rich, not necessarily poor, just an elite status.
I like that.
Try this one. Lenore, try this one. What's the difference between to dishearten and to discourage?
Dishearten? To dishearten is to make someone feel badly about something inside.
Feel bad.
Feel bad. Really?
Right.
It's
yes.
not that
yeah.
bad?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, you feel
and
badly.
To discourage is to try to stop someone from doing something.
You know something? Absolutely. Ring that bell. I'm going
to... Is that kind of...
That's yeah. pretty much it. Because to dishearten is to sap the spirit or enthusiasm for by either active or passive means. But as you said, to discourage is to actively try to prevent by expressing disapproval or raising objections or making something seem unwieldy. So, yes, it's a very active and passive thing.
Yay!
10 points. And finally, I'm going to get a whole lot of mail on this, Bear, but see if you can do it. Can you distinguish among insure, I-N-S-U-R-E, ensure, E-N-S-U-R-E.
You don't drink insure.
Yeah. And assure, A-S-S-U-R-E, insure, ensure, and assure.
To ensure, I-N-S-U-R, yes. that something is going to happen. To ensure something is to be dedicated to the fact that you will be made whole by this, that you will, that there will
protect.
Be a satisfactory outcome.
To protect.
To protect. To ensure something is to make sure that something will be accomplished, and to assure something is to be confirmatory.
You know something? Once again, that's a long ride, but it's a good one. Now, I'm going to get a lot of mail on this, but this is what I got from the dictionary. To assure is, as you said, A-S-S-U-R-E. To assure a person of something is to make him or her confident of it. To ensure, E-N, is that something happens, is to make certain that it does, to do whatever you have to do to make sure that it happens. And to insure is to issue an insurance policy. And that's what they say it is, and I'm sure I'm going to hear a lot from the radio audience, but that's later. Right now, we're looking at a 96-point day for Murray Horowitz's team and a victory. Congratulations, winners this week. I want to take a moment, and I want to thank Mike Collins.
Bravo!
Stepped up here. And did represented himself and his town just wonderfully. Thank you, Mike. Next time we come down, we'd love to see you. And if you come up north, sit and play with us anytime. Nice to have you here. And, that is all we have time for in Charlotte. We want to thank everyone here, and that's a lot of people. It's Amanda Thompson, Matt McCauley, Michael Fogelman, Nick Croslin, and Alex Nolan, all the folks at the Dunhill Hotel who made everything possible for us. Thanks to Dawn Cloutier, Kevin Salger, Bobby Golobart, and all the folks here, Pease Auditorium at Central Piedmont Community College. We send our best to Roger Saro, Brian Talbot, Dale Spear, and all the folks at WFAE here in Charlotte. Sharon Salkin write the words, Antonio Oliard captures the moment, and Zach Moore is soon hard at work senior year. So long today from North Carolina, where a sign was recently posted in a church window, spaghetti dinner Sunday night, prayer and medication to follow. We're keeping it real in Charlotte, and we'll see you all next week. Here sends you again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at saysyou.net.
It's never enough for me.
Benjamin, give him the skinny.
Says You, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
You've been listening to Says You here on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. Support for our programming comes from the generous support of Nashville Public Radio members. You can join our community of supporters by making a tax-deductible contribution at WPLN.org.
On the next On Being, Taya Miles. Her work is about making history useful. She's unearthed a painful chapter of American life where Native Americans